All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're ready to get going again. And so we did start our meeting with the work session and an executive session. So at this point, we are at item number 4, which is our Pledge of Allegiance. So if we will all stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank Carol Lentz for hosting us here at Raymond Elementary School. Brought us some lovely treats. We enjoyed them. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And now, let's see, item 5 is adoption of our agenda. So if I could have a motion to adopt our agenda.
So moved.
Mr. Pleasant, and I'll second it. Roll call.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. And looks like we're going to start out our evening with a presentation from Raymond Elementary on the Common Core.
Yay! Just, you're welcome. Just a
Thank
couple
you.
Of things. So, I do want to officially welcome you and thank you again for coming out. I wish it could have been an easier way in, so I apologize for the construction. We definitely had to do a little problem solving. I think that's been a design challenge, how to get buses in, how to get parents in, and get them back out. That's been quite the task. I do have to say, though, the gentlemen from the Union County Engineer's Office have been absolutely wonderful to work with. The construction gentleman, the project supervisor, has been in multiple times, you know, just giving me a heads up. Because unfortunately, they can set deadlines or projections of, you know, when they're going to be in certain places, but sometimes they run into trouble and things get pushed back or they're ahead of schedule. I said, if you can just at least give me 24 hours, you know, give me 24 hours notice before I have to reroute traffic, we'll be okay. So anyway, lots and lots going on out there. But thank you. And I do have to say, too, that the parents have been so understanding. They've been very gracious. You know, you get a little nervous when you're kind of, you know, rerouting, pickup duty, and all that kind of good stuff, but they've been great. So as I was thinking about the presentation for this time, as I shared, you know, it's a different time of year for me this time. Last year, if you remember, it was snowing, so we were in January. I think that's why they moved me to
meeting.
September.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was our first meeting, that's right. But anyway, I just wanted to give you, though, maybe a few highlights from the past year, just kind of where we ended, and then we'll kind of head into where we're going for this upcoming year. So just a few things from our work plans from the previous year. We completed the ALICE training for all staff and some of our parents that volunteered to go. We implemented OTES and OPES last year, so our teacher evaluation system and principal evaluation system. And that was full-blown last year, so everybody participated in that. We planted seeds last year for our design challenge process. At the end of the year, we provided the teachers with some professional development, kind of gave them, you know, a challenge to do something by the end of the year. So just kind of get their feet wet. This year we're going to follow up with that, but the teachers are very excited. I think this just fits in perfectly with the way elementary teachers think. You know, getting kids actively engaged, giving them a problem, letting them discover. So I know at least for our staff, we're very excited about it. We conducted progress monitoring meetings last year again, really focusing in on, you know, our kiddos that maybe need a little extra something, you know, that aren't meeting district expectations or state expectations, and how can we better meet their needs. So getting folks involved, the guidance counselor if need be, the psychologist, our reading specialist, even our intervention specialist, you know, with our special ed teachers, and saying, how can you help us, you know, meet the needs of all of our kids. We implemented the third grade reading guarantee, So we were, you know, a little nervous about that, you know, whether or not we were going to have to retain anybody, which we did not. We were very pleased. We did have a few children that did not pass or meet the expectation, but they were exempt due to their IEPs. And then we also had one student who passed through an alternative test. So we were pleased that we didn't have to, you know, retain anyone, but we know that we still have work to do so that, you know, we're not in that situation. We really want to work with kids, you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, so that by the time we get to third grade, we're not, you know, dealing with some of those concerns. We added math coaches last year, and I know Beth and Bethany Ann were here last year to help us present. The math coaches, oh my goodness, that's, teachers have been, you know, begging for job-embedded professional development for math. You know, we've had the literacy coaches for a while, so including the math coaches was a great, great step for our teachers. This year we have a different math coach. Mary and Beth actually switched, so, but they're one and the same, I think. If you have one, you have the other. And they work so closely together, so we're very, very excited to continue that process this year, as are the teachers. We did pilot an inclusion model for our special needs children. We started kind of small with our third grade math, and this year we'll kind of talk about it just a bit, but, you know, we've expanded that. So it's really looking at, you know, not just a one-size-fits-all approach, a delivery model. We want to look at, you know, the individual kids and what delivery model is going to best meet their needs. Whether that's, you know, an inclusion, pushing in, whether it's a resource opportunity, maybe it's getting, when we've been working with getting more volunteers to come out and work with our kids, just to get some additional, we really need to, in some cases, double dose some of our kids. Because those kids, you know, obviously, we want to provide the greatest level of intensity for those students. We also hosted Monarch Cub meetings, and those are for our wee ones, our preschoolers. So we targeted boys and girls that were going to be kindergartners this year. Linda Schwinn, we kind of headed that up with Judy Van Dusen. We also included the coaches in that. You know, not a huge turnout this year, but, you know, we're hopeful that we'll be able to get, you know, more kids involved in that. Really just bringing them in, talking to the parents. You know, we kind of had different focuses, a math focus, a literacy night, and then we also, our music teacher even came and did some old finger plays and some music type things, you know, to get kids involved in rhymes and just that whole, you know, rhythmic language. So it was really a lot of fun. Again, I think that's an area that I would like to see expanded just because, you know, we see a lot of our kindergartners coming in and maybe aren't, they haven't had the opportunity to go to preschool. So if we can give parents, you know, some tools to work with their kids at home, then, you know, maybe they're going to be, you know, better prepared when they walk in our doors for kindergarten in the fall. So that was exciting. So I just wanted to give you a quick update then on our report card. We just received this information, and I know, I think Diane's also going to talk about it, but I just wanted to kind of highlight a little bit. So last year, our focus, we really were challenged to look at our lowest 20% in achievement. We had a C last year. We're pleased to say that this year we did raise that. So we have a B this year, which means that, you know, we grew those kids more than a year's progress. So we were really, really excited about that. With that said, we have a new focus this year. We're looking at our gap closing. For the first time, we had a subgroup for our economically disadvantaged. And I'll have to say, you know, over the 3 years, this is my third year at Raymond, we have definitely seen an increase in the number of students who are receiving, you know, some of the free or reduced lunch. So, you know, more of those students are coming to us with that need. And then, but it's really about, it's not just about economically disadvantaged, but it's looking at the needs of the kids again. So we're going to be having, and we'll talk about it, but we're going to be having some very focused data meetings, you know, and not singling this child out because, you know, they're economically disadvantaged, but because, you know, maybe they're not meeting our district or local expectations. So that's going to be a focus then for this year. But overall, we were pleased 100% of our indicators were met, even with the increase, you know, going from 75 to 80% passage. So we were excited about that. We're going to take a look at performance index. Our performance index was slightly lower than last year. So really, again, making sure that, you know, all of our kids are progressing and having at least a year's growth. And then I just thought I would talk a little bit about work plans then for this upcoming year. As you are well aware, the district has created the strategic plan with these four goals in mind. You know, student performance, sustainability, maintaining a safe learning environment, and developing community partnerships. So this year, our work plans then were aligned to those four areas. And just to give you, I included the work plans in your folder, but just to kind of highlight a few of those things, for our student performance goal, we would like to increase the staff knowledge of the design challenge process. This year, we're actually going to combine that with our Leader in Me, the pride groups that we do. So pride groups for Raymond are cross-grade level, and the kids meet typically, usually about once or twice a month in those pride groups. And those pride groups, they actually stay with those all throughout their years at Raymond. So we just kind of add, you know, the kindergartners each year to different pride groups. With the fourth graders then, they lead those pride groups. So we thought, what a great way is if we can provide and talk about, give them a certain challenge or a design challenge, and then let that fourth grade team kind of lead their pride then through that design challenge. We don't know how it's going to work out, but we're excited to try it. The teachers are, again, really excited to do those not only in our pride groups, but also in their classrooms. But that's something that, like I said, it's a little bit of a twist on something that we've already been doing, so we're excited to put that new twist on it. We're going to continue with job-embedded professional development. We're going to expand and enhance our delivery model for special education students. I spoke just a little bit about the inclusion model. We're expanding that into fourth grade this year, so and actually into one of our primary classes. So we're really excited about that. And we're also going to refine our data meetings with grade level teams. So lots and lots to kind of help us with that student performance and student learning area. We're excited about that. Sustainability and effective use of resources. We have just a few things that I kind of wanted to highlight for you. We're going to monitor and prioritize spending on classrooms. Really making sure that the materials and the things that we're purchasing are aligned to our curriculum maps and aligned to the strategic plan. We're going to continue to partner with our Raymond PTO to provide supplemental education materials as needed. The PTO has been very supportive and helpful in purchasing smart boards for our classrooms. We have all of our regular ed classrooms and one special ed classroom that the PTO helped provide the boards for. We just have like three more classrooms and we'll be done. So we're really excited. We had a good fall fundraiser, so I've already said, when can I order? I already got the quote from the company, so that'll be exciting. The teachers are just ecstatic to have that resource in their classrooms. Now we probably need to go back and maybe provide some PD, you know, on how to make sure we're using that in the, you know, the best way that we can, but at least they're in the rooms. We're also going to conduct, I would like to conduct a needs assessment for classroom instructional materials. And that will align with our materials adoption cycle. So we put together kind of a cycle to talk to help us so that we can look at whether it be language arts materials or math or science and social studies materials, but really getting in and talking to the teachers about, you know, what materials would you possibly need, you know, coming up in the future for those. So that was part of our sustainability. Maintaining a safe learning environment. We're going to continue to partner with our local officials for health and fire inspections. We're also going to implement our revised emergency operating emergency operating procedures manual with the staff. That's been updated, so we need to get staff on board now and make sure that they understand that process. And then we also need to update our emergency folders here at Raymond. So that's definitely one of our, you know, highlights as far as maintaining our safe learning environment. We're very, very fortunate. We partner a lot with, in addition to the Union County Sheriff's Department, they're kind of our go-to people out here, and they are wonderful. They come out, help us with our crisis drills, you know, offer suggestions, so we'll definitely keep that partnership going as well. They come and check on us, so it's very nice. If I need them, they're there in a minute. And also community partnerships. We're going to really work this year to increase our volunteer program to meet the needs of our kids. With that said, we're also going to try to offer some training for those folks. So, you know, giving them, especially if we're going to be asking them to work with our kids with reading, you know, just giving them some additional skills or, you know, suggestions on how to work with those kids. We're very fortunate. The Raymond Methodist Church is close. I've already, kind of through email, we've been in contact with the new pastor, and she's excited to, you know, possibly be able to offer volunteers. I've also been in, I know Linda Schwinn is also excited to maybe work with us and partner with us to get some volunteers. So really expanding that that program. We have a good number of parent volunteers, but we feel like if we can expand that, we'll be able to, you know, have them work with more children. We're going to continue our service projects, and we decided as a staff that we really want to focus this year on service projects that give back to the Raymond community specifically. In the past, you know, I think schools get hit up for a lot. Jump rope for heart, pennies for patients, and all of those are fantastic, and, you know, we wish we could help everybody, but we decided this year to really focus on the ones that will give back specifically to the Raymond community. The Raymond Food Pantry, the Personal Needs Pantry, and then we've also talked, the third one's kind of up in the air. We've been talking about possibly the Humane Society. We haven't really landed on the third one. It's still early yet, but again, the focus, you know, giving back to that Raymond community. And this is also part of our leader in need, you know, part of that leadership at Raymond. We did add social media to inform our community. We're so excited. So follow us on Twitter if you have a Twitter account. And I've been learning how to tweet.
I just tweeted your presentation.
Hey, there we go. And Mrs. Mankins finally followed us. So I was so excited. I'm like, wow, she hasn't followed us yet. That was good. No, this is like, okay, so I really am not on Facebook or any of that good stuff. But I'm telling you, this Twitter is an amazing way to get information out. And it's real time. Chris Dice, our technology director, was actually able to put in our live Twitter feed. Good golly. Twitter feed on the Raymond webpage. So even if you don't have, you know, a Twitter account, you can get in and see. And I've been trying to go around to classrooms. And just tweeting out, you know, the good things that we're doing. I think the more we can, you know, because parents, you know, we have a lot of working parents. parents, and they can't always be in our classrooms, but the more information that we can get out to them, I'm excited. So, and my daughter follows me. She's like, Mom, quit tweeting about it. I said, but it's exciting stuff. She really doesn't care what happens in my kindergarten class. And I really don't care for what's happening in some of her tweets either. No, I don't. So that was it. I just want to thank you again for coming to read. If you have any questions about kind of, again, this is like a different time of the year for me. So it's just kind of this is where we're going for the year. But we really appreciate you making the hike all the way out to Raymond. So we appreciate it.
I appreciate all the work that you put into this, and I was, again, looking through the building reports. It's just so nice now that everybody is consistent across the board, you know, and that we have these four areas that we can look at your goals,
yes,
and your work plans, and so you put a lot of time into this, and we appreciate it. We had your building liaison here.
Yes,
so,
I did, and as I told you, I had a marvelous time. I contacted Carol and specifically asked to come at lunch. And
I thought it was crazy, to be honest. Yeah.
No, but
I, really?
Yeah. And got here, we had a little bit of a conversation, and then they have two lunch periods, so went in and got to see all the kids in the first lunch. And I was able to get a couple of Go-Gurts open walked around and saw a lot of the kids, and then had a chance because somebody had a birthday,
yes,
and there was a potluck for that, and so I had a chance to share lunch with some of the teachers in the building, and that was sure nice. And then we made it to the second lunch, but I will tell you, if you've never been in an elementary building at lunch, you need to go. It's the management that the teachers had and the behavior of the kids and just the routine that they follow was absolutely astounding. I just absolutely marveled at how smoothly 100-some kids were able to get in and get their meal and get out. And things were cleaned up and picked up, and tables were in good order, and it was just amazing, just absolutely amazing.
I do have to chuckle with opening some of the packages. Our third grade actually took it on. They are so frustrated because they can't open up their own buttermilk ranch packets. So they got together, and they have written a letter to the company.
Excellent.
Asking them
Excellent.
To redesign their packages
Excellent.
So that so one of their, that's kind of gross, but one of their reasons behind it was that sometimes the kids put the packets in their mouth,
right.
So then the germs, and then the teachers are using the same scissors, and mm-hmm. So, I mean, they had, a rationale for why this was a bad idea and why you need to change it. So I'm actually kind of excited to see, mm-hmm. If the company responds and they... I would love it if they would change those.
Yeah,
that's great.
But it was,
but
I will tell you, it was a great visit. I had a marvelous time, and
I enjoyed the apple on the way home. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
All right, superintendent's report.
Sure. A little different for me this time. I actually doing a PowerPoint here.
Okay.
Let's see if it works. That won't be another one.
It's not.
I
see
it
to
the
back. too far?
Too far.
Okay.
That's all right. I can come up there. All right. So I wanted to go over district report card a little bit tonight. Let's see if this one's I sent you, Jonathan sent you a link. I also sent you kind of a detailed sheet, or 24 or 44 pages, I think, kind of highlighting our district's progress this year. This sheet is simply kind of an overview, gives you a sense of diversity in the district, enrollment, and those pieces. This will be next, as we move forward, the blocks begin to fill in over time. With overall ratings, but I like to kind of talk about the details a little bit and where we are. Performance Index, we received a B as a district this year. We're going to talk about that. It's one of our goals to increase over time. We're kind of hanging out in the same area. Again, indicators met, we received an A, even though we lost two indicators this year, so we'll talk about that. Gap closing. A gap closing is an achievement-based test or result data piece that really looks at your subgroup performance as compared to all kids' performance, if you want to think of it in very simple terms. So it looks at how your subgroups are performing. It sets a target for your subgroups as well. The interesting piece is that, if you remember when No Child Left Behind first came out, the goal was to have all kids pass by 2014. Well, there were some revisions in that over time, kind of making it a sliding scale, an upward trend to reach that 100%. So currently, the rate of passage for your subgroup is actually higher than what you're required to achieve on the report card for all students. So I think that's a pretty important indicator. So those subgroups are defined for a purpose. They're defined because they are populations with exceptional, exceptionalities would be the best word. So anywhere from gifted to our struggling learners to learners with disabilities. K through 3 literacy, they've given us an opportunity to revise the data that's in K through literacy, but we're going to talk about that as well. Progress is really what you've always heard me talk about, what we can hang our hat on. That's how much we're growing kids. So in the value-added scale, there's a trajectory for each student on based on multiple data points on where that student should score. The amount of impact your teacher has, it's your value-added, is where that how that student gets it, or that subgroup gets a score. So an A is substantially above expected. A C is expected growth, which is 1 year. So as you can see, as a district, we're doing really well in that area. Even a B is exceeding expected growth. Graduation rate, we're hanging out in the B range. Aaron and Kat and I have been meeting to look at cohorts of kids as that calculation has changed a little bit over time. And prepared for success are indicators that are linked to college preparedness and career preparedness. So on the achievement side, I talked about, this is our performance index. We're at 101.6, last year we were 101.8, so we're in the same neighborhood. Really that score is calculated by how students score on the test. Accelerated receives a weighted score, and you can see kind of points for the level. So the more kids you have in that range, the higher the weighted score. So that's how that score is calculated. So really, it's about moving your limited kids to basic, your basic kids to proficient, your proficient kids on up the scale, and how much you can move them in an upward trend. We missed two places. We would have met them if the indicator stayed at 75%, but we did know that was increasing. So fifth grade math and eighth grade science. Eighth grade science was at 74.9 last year, and it was 75. And this year we're setting it, I think it was 78.8 or something like that. So we're right on the cusp every time. So making some changes there. And I know Tim and his team are also looking at the data for that mathematics score. Gifted students, so again, this is kind of a new area for us. We identify gifted students, but currently do not serve gifted students. Over time, that's been something that has been reduced. So right now, we're in conversations on how we might be able to add some of that back. We have a half of gifted posting out there and have had all summer, but are struggling to find someone to fill that spot. So we are contemplating moving that to a full position to see if we can gain any interest that way to help with the implementation of service. Progress, we talked a little bit about this. So if you look in that box and you just kind of look at the dark green, that's exceptional growth, that really dark shade. And as it gets lighter, you're moving closer to the yellow, which is 1 year, if you think about that. And then it's also fades out to the darker end on red. If you look at all grades of reading, we had a mean gain of 10, which is significant increase in NCE scores. And without going into a great data discussion, which I was told today I was a data geek, the 10 on all tests of reading is a significant gain. You don't typically see gains of that nature. So again, Creek View, fifth, sixth grade, some areas of concern there. But the rest of the district is pretty solid. And really, again, that's about taking kids from where they are and moving them forward. So we're having significant gains in that area. I really don't like this chart, and I'll tell you why, because if you look at the bottom, the legend changes. So what blue is on the first graph is not the same as the second graph, and that's really too far away for me to read, so I'll give you a nice little recap. The line that goes down shows where you need to be on that subgroup. So remember I said there was a percentage they had to pass that was higher than everyone else in the district? That line marks where that is. So you can see where the subgroups are in relation to that. So a lot of the buildings are like, Diane, are you kidding me? We don't have a, what was the one we looked at the other day, Jonathan? Multiracial and Asian Pacific Islander in our building. Well, you probably don't in your building because it takes 30 to make a subgroup. But when you take the district all together, it does count for a subgroup for the district. So all the buildings might not be monitoring those specific subgroups because they didn't show up on their report card. They do show up on the district report card because collectively we have over 30 students. So that's something we'll continue to work on and talk about. Graduation rate, 4 year is at 92.6, 5 year is at 94.1. It's a new calculation. That really takes that freshman cohort, and then no one else can count in that cohort. So really it's forced us to be a little more intentional about students who are moving out. Sometimes we didn't chase them down. They told us they were going to ECOT. Sometimes they never enrolled in ECOT. So that counts as a dropout for us if they don't ever enroll somewhere else. Or if they just quit doing ECOT, that also counts for a dropout for us. So we've had to look at different ways to monitor how they're taking courses outside, even though they're not really our students anymore. So we'll continue to do that as well. But to be an A, I think it's 95. So we'll continue to work towards that. So K-3 literacy. I'm going to explain this to you the best I can. So students who are behind where they need to be are put on a reading improvement plan. And this piece of the report card really tells you if they were not on track and we identified them, then when we went back to check them the following year, were they back on track? And you get points for if you get them back on track. That's the easiest way to explain it. Then, the bottom line, you actually see a reduction if your students in third grade don't pass the test and they weren't on a reading improvement plan. A majority of that 29 students are students in special education, which the state had told us last year didn't need to be on a reading improvement plan, and in reality, they do. And so we now know that and won't make that mistake again. But the state is also allowing us to fix some entry mistakes. There were problems across the state in the data entry. It was a new calculation for us, so we'll have the opportunity. I know principals are already working with Johnson on making sure, you know, out of those 21 kids, is that 21 accurate? Who is responsible for those students? So they're working on that now. But if you look at that, 38.2% is an F. So we're hoping as we check our students that we know we have some mistakes already, but we hope to clear some of those up and increase that. But still, that speaks to the importance of that K-1-2 piece that we've talked about, especially looking at kindergarten. And I know we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. So really, you're calculated on your own points. So you start off with the total number of points that were on those not on track, and then when they get on track. So you're setting up your own equation there. These are the indicators for prepared for success. So some of these are highly aligned to things we've been talking about. Kids in AP, kids taking the ACT, kids with industry credentials, things of that nature, dual enrollment. So again, will be a future indicator, but they start showing you what you're recording now. So this sheet kind of gives you an overview of the buildings. I was not going to go into each building specifically for purpose of this evening. You can see performance index, we're all kind of hanging out in the same area with the B. Again, when you look at the performance index and you see we have a 101.8, you have to divide that by 120 because that's how many points are possible on the performance index. It's just not 101%. So that's what puts us in the B range. Indicators met, you can see that we're on the A, B range. When it gets into progress is when you start seeing some disparity across buildings. Remember a C is expected, even though the principals have heard at the Mankins household you get grounded for a C. C's are acceptable on their report card at my house. And so nor are they in our Marysville house. So they're working hard to continue to increase those numbers as well. Continue to work at Creekview. Creekview's had some issues. We've been working on those. That's where the gifted person is designed to go. Tim has restructured teams headed into this year and being a little more intentional about some things happening, so I'm pretty excited about that. If you have the opportunity to visit Creekview, I forget who is Creekview's liaison. I would highly recommend to ask to see their data room. They have one entire room that's dedicated to note cards with every single student's name on it and where they are and where they need to go. And they're talking about the interventions to get them to the next step. So definitely doing some good work, and we'll continue to meet with Tim in the progress of that building. Gap closing speaks for itself. Obviously, that's an area of improvement for the entire district as we look at those subgroups. And talk about closing the achievement gap. There's multiple ways to get there. One of the ways is to meet that indicator, which also increases again this year. I did not bring my number. Do you guys remember the number for this year? Achievement gap, 86.4 or something.
86.82.
Reading and then math. So it would take 86%, I believe, of that subgroup to pass to meet that indicator outright. So
to get it, would that be an A? Would that be considered an A getting that, or just a
that's
C?
To meet it outright, yeah, that's okay. 100, you'd get an okay. A.
Is there one or two subgroups that are driving to a problem with gap closing, or is it a bunch of subgroups?
So if you go back to that chart where the colors change and look at that, is in particular our socioeconomic and our special education.
Okay.
And they were the focus of last year. We talked a lot about those subgroups. So a lot of the buildings have made adjustments with inclusion models, getting some PD for the inclusion teachers, some things of that nature that have made some difference, so we'll continue to progress monitor. The principals have data meetings with me, which they love, right? So they meet with me to review their data. Now, it's all clear. If you're A's and B's, you don't have to meet with me, but C or below, we're going to get together and see what I can do. Last year, there was opportunity that we had some shift in people and some resignations, so we were able to shift some staff and help with some intervention groups by the end of the time. So it's really an opportunity for them to tell me what they need, too, and our job to kind of put that together and make it happen for them. I think we did that at Edgewood, Navin, and Northwood, maybe towards the end of the year. Questions for me over data?
I talked about this at the chamber meeting a little bit this morning, and really I think what strikes me is that if the focus is on using this information to make instruction better, I mean, that, I guess to me that's what the focus should be, you know, and the fear that I have sometimes when this information goes out and people don't really understand all of the calculations that go behind this and all the subgroups and, you know, just like with the reading guarantee that they had said that special education didn't need to have the improvement plan and what they do. So, you know, making sure that when the information is out there, people don't just have a knee-jerk reaction and say, what, you've got a D in gap closing? You know, and I went to the website and was looking at a variety of different districts, and I saw a C in gap closing in one district, but the majority of them were D's and F's. You know, so, I mean, I think there's a combination of the requirements being raised, you know, a lot of information that the general public doesn't know. And so if we focus on the fact that we're just using it to make our instruction better, I mean, that's the main focus.
Yeah, creating more opportunities. I mean, I think that's what our focus was last year when principals came forward and said, we're still not getting there with these kids and I could use X, Y, and Z. So then we went back and looked at some grants we had and we said, okay, we can give you, you know, these last 80 days someone to come in every day and help with this targeted group of students. So that's really the goal. And at the end of the day, you know, we want those students to catch up. We want to eliminate that gap. That's a significant jump from 80 to 85 and 82 to, you know.
Right. And I like the fact that it highlighted the need for gifted services too, even though they're not funded.
Right.
We know that, so.
They certainly emphasize that.
Yes.
What did you mean when you said that you were having trouble filling that position?
We posted for a half-time gifted, and we can't really find someone that wants to work half-time. We may look at going to a full-time position and opening the scope of what we expected them to do a little bit to other grade levels. We do some clustering in the elementaries and some things like that, but certainly doing some PD with the teachers on ways to, you know, develop some rich math problems. Like I've been able to witness at Navin a couple of times, and things like that would be ways in which we could service as well. Other questions for me? All in all, it is a good report card. We have certainly a lot to be proud of. The piece that I always go to is that value added. That means that's the impact that our teachers are having on our kids, and that's significant. I mean, a 10 mean gain probably doesn't mean much to the commoner, but to the data geek, it is significantly above the chart. So super proud of that.
And they do also include you know, the results from prior years. Mm-hmm. And you can see, I mean, we showed improvement, I think, almost across the board in every area. So
yes. And it's the new report card is very interactive. If you haven't been on, you can change the type of graph you get. Mm-hmm. You can look at historical data as well.
I'm proud too. You guys,
yeah, I'm super
great
proud.
Job.
Other questions? All right.
Doesn't do me good to say that. Did I miss something up here?
Oh.
Are you going to change?
There's been conversation about redistricting. Certainly the district has gone through a significant amount of change and we need some time to get some things in place to pull that off. So what I wanted to share with you today is kind of our plan for redistricting and what we look to do with the end in mind of having a formal plan to the board for approval in April. Redistricting was last completed in 2007 from the records I can find. Really our need now is we have wide enrollment ranges in our elementaries, and obviously this is an elementary issue only. So Northwood is approaching 500 and certainly have some concerns about that. We have some busing patterns that don't make a lot of sense when I show you the map here in a second. So we want to kind of address that as well. And with that, then we'll create a better sense of kind of that community or neighborhood school. And also, we know that we have buses passing each other going to different places. So it comes down to kind of an efficiency with our transportation department as well. So, as you look at this map, this is how our current redistricting looks. The darker, I guess, purplish-blue shade is Raymond's attendance area, so you think they would have 952 kids, right? with that large space. Kind of the, let's call it the aqua color, is Maven. The hot pinkish color, which suits the principal fine, is Mill Valley, I believe, there. And the Edgewood is the yellowish color towards the bottom. And
more
the dark. Which matches the principal for sure. Sorry, was I supposed to say golden? And then the brown is Northwood. So you can see that things are broken up a bit. In that distribution and how kids are transported into schools. So really we're proposing three phases. I'll talk about each one of those. The first phase is kind of the announcement of what we're doing, getting people on board to be a part of the committee and community action. Then the second phase will be actually developing the maps and making the final announcement. And the third phase will be kind of that transition and getting prepared. So mid-September, so about now, we will present to you our plan of action. We're also going to do a call to applicants to be on the superintendent's redistricting task force. I'm sure that's real impressive on a resume, right? But we're going to look to do a volunteer list and send that out for people to return to us if they're interested. We would hope to get about 10 people from each elementary school is kind of the goal. We want to keep that as even as possible, so at the same time, we really don't want to tell anyone no. So we're going to kind of monitor how those come in and how we can most effectively do that. We're going to establish a section on the website for updates, information, feedback. Also, we'll be meeting with staff to discuss the process, if there'll be shifts in assignments, and those kind of things as students may shift. And then establish guidelines for the committee. Feedback we've received from a consultant we've talked to really worked with us on the idea of setting up some clear parameters and rules for the group as you move forward, and keeping the best interests of the district in mind as we work through that committee. Phase two will be October and November, so we'll start, the committee meetings will start up, we'll start looking at maps and map options, we'll have software that will allow us to change the redistricting structure by, for example, a street, and it'll still encompass it, be able to show what that change, the impact for that. January, we'll kind of launch some draft maps out to the public and provide opportunities through PTO and different groups to get feedback. Also, there will be a feedback option online. February, we'll bring the group back together, read through all the feedback, see if we need to have any additional meetings, what revisions, what can we change based on the feedback. In March, they'll give me a final recommendation. We'll work with Ronnie and other, probably Mike, to make sure there isn't any final tweaks that need to be made to that. And then April, we would anticipate bringing that to the board for approval. I'll give updates on the committee in my superintendent's report as we move through the year. Phase three will be up to the principals to really hold open houses, create. That team, as you know, works very closely together. So create a strategy to invite to make that transition a little more welcoming for parents as well as the students coming. Any questions that you might have for me on that process and what it will look like?
Have you been through this before?
I have not, so excited to do that. We are going to work within a consultant who has, so we'll be dependent on them to help guide and lead us as well. But Jonathan and I will be working on that.
So the new districts are going to affect for fall 15-16, right?
If people are interested, how do you want them to contact you? Or
right, so we are going to do an email blast to all elementary parents, and with a I'm not sure if we're going to do an attachment or a form that they go to the website. That's a little fuzzy now. Submitting their interest, so I will let you know which way that's going to be, and the form, regardless, will be available on the our website. Mm-hmm.
And you said it was last done in 2007.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of change since then, hasn't it?
There has been a lot of change. And certainly the development of Northwood has caused, right now we're doing some shuttle runs because we've overflowed to different buildings, which isn't the ultimate for anyone, really, to catch a bus and ride it to Mill Valley and then catch something else over to Navin. Because Mill Valley might be full or Northwood might be full. So it'll help kind of pan out those numbers and create a better, you know, sense of community there.
I appreciate your work. I think it's overdue now. I mean, yeah, we've needed this change, and then it's obvious with all those, you know, people passing each other in the streets and that kind of stuff. So look forward to seeing what happens.
I'm sure it'll be a passionate response. Mm-hmm. We'll just work hard to make sure people are heard. We have committed to reading anybody who does submit something online. We're going to read every single one of those. If they are unavailable to participate, we still want to hear their input. So.
Great.
All right.
Okay.
Todd, are you on now?
Well,
or do we want Craig?
Craig's update?
Craig, you're on.
Good.
How does a Harley guy get into a cold wing area?
How does a Harley guy get what?
How does a Harley guy get into Goldwing country?
That's my question.
Well,
yeah, there we go. Right.
Got a few funny looks, but that's all right. It's better behind than rolling is a better bike.
You can get off the bike and still be jiggling the disc, yeah.
Yeah, one of these days, if I had the bankroll, I'd get a wing. But, we accomplished achieved our second major milestone, which was to have the last year of the building complete by the 15th. So I'm proud to say that Priscilla, with the project team, has met our commitments to date and will continue to do so. The flooring has arrived, and we have started that today. There was guys that have already started doing what's called floor prep in Area D. That's the last, second to last puzzle piece. And they are going to continue to try in the next 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer on that, depends on how fast the floor preparation goes, to get the flooring, linoleum, carpet tile down. Also, we have all the equipment in the mechatronics room, which is really cool. So now that's in, we're going to start the epoxy flooring in there and make it a really nice show piece of a room, like we all expect to look at, and then be good, you know, for the children to... students get ready to go in there and utilize that space. So our current schedule is to be done by November 6th. However, there is some things out there that are being added to make sure we have everything in place electrically, mechanically, and so that might possibly extend us a little bit, but the school will continue to operate and won't be without any interruption. Furnishings, we should have some coming here beginning of October. However, the teacher desk and student desk, the laminate color has caused a bit of an extension to that, and we still don't have a confirmed delivery date, so that is going to come a little bit later. But pretty soon, the areas that have the greatest impact that you see visually when you walk in will start filling with furnishings as we get here into October. And so by the end of October, hopefully we have everything that you'd see. But by then, we'll hopefully also have a delivery date for the rest of the furnishings for it. The building. And so now it's just completing the finer details. We have, you know, exterior sign. We still have to get on site and get that installed, your new digital sign for the front, take down the old one. We have some uplighting to feature that mechatronics room, and basically wrap up and hopefully turn over a facility that works and serves this district for a long period of time and meets all the goals it intended. So we're excited. We're heading towards the finish line. Has the board had a chance to walk through recently? Any of the board members?
Great. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah,
a couple weeks
now.
Recently,
yeah.
Since we get some flooring down, actually, I would like to wait until we get some flooring down. That really is going to finish the space and make it look really neat. Mm-hmm. Somebody here picked some really unique colors, and I'm excited to see it all come together. Mm-hmm. I was told, have faith and just wait, and I am. And look fantastic. I'm very excited.
Excited.
I am.
Enthusiasm is.
I am. It's underwhelming, exactly.
Do you think, will the flooring be done by October 16th, do you think? I was at the chamber meeting, and they had said something about...
Yeah, I think the majority...
chamber meeting there.
Majority of the spaces will have it. I don't want to...
I'm not sure of all of it,
but
right.
Pretty much... I would say 75% or better should be four. You know, we're going to go for all of it. It just depends how fast it goes with floor prep. Right. So that's our goal, is to have it all done. But, it'll be real close. Mm-hmm. I think that what we're trying to do is line up a grand opening. We've already opened.
Right.
And there's some neat things. You know, we want to get the digital sign in. That makes a big impact. Get the features on for the mechatronics room, the lighting and such on the outside. Get our feature walls done. They came up with some really neat, and Diane worked with the architect, really neat feature walls that makes a really immediate impact as soon as you walk in the building. Get those done and try to have all ready for about that time, trying to get that done. It just all depends how long it takes to go through county review. The county has to review that design and approve it before we go ahead and get it started. So they've been great. The county's been phenomenal to work with so far. They've been nothing but helpful for us. So I imagine they'll extend us every courtesy, try to expedite so we can get it all done by middle to the end of October.
Okay.
Does the board have any
other questions? We'll have a good Thanksgiving break, right?
Absolutely.
Be thankful for a building that's totally done.
Absolutely. absolutely. It'll be before Thanksgiving. I can tell you, if it's not, then I'll be fired. So
right.
I have to get it done. It's not an option. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but as soon as we get some flooring down, I'll have Diane keep posted. I think by next time we come here, I don't know if we can have the board meeting next time there or whatever you want to do, but get a chance to walk around and see it.
So how's it been going with the students and the workers in the building?
We're pretty much isolated. You know, the way we've worked with Kathy, and again, she's been terribly flexible in helping us out. We have what's called Area D. That's the area closest to Route 31, and there's no one in there. It's not occupied. You don't have enough students for that. So we keep the doors closed, and our flooring contractor's the only one in there, and they're starting flooring. Down in Area A, the ramp that go down, we still keep that wall up, and we keep that door in place until we have all that done. That has a little more work yet to do, and some paint, some touch-up. So until that's done, we aren't going to open that. For students, we achieve life safety. We could open if you wanted to, but there's no need to. There's nothing to go down there. Plus, we just got the equipment in there to get that connected and put together. So keeping them separated still worked out pretty well. To my knowledge, from the staff and at least from Kathy, there hasn't been any concerns or any issues. It's worked out quite well.
I mean, that's one of the benefits of just having the one grade level in there.
Yes, it does make it a lot easier for us because as we go, the center section of that building area we call Area C, which is where the auditorium is and the stage and all that, all the classrooms, that's where we have to do some jockeying around, maybe work second shift to get that done so we don't affect classroom operations and what they're doing day to day. And so we're going to have to do a little bit, and hopefully it'll be okay for the kids who have to, and the staff. We have to do a little bit of moving around because when I get to that main center area, I'm going to do one half, close that, and then open that up and do the other half. So we're going to have staff in them because there's plenty of other areas we'll have to be able to go to. So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
so
you.
So you're going to see me at least one or possibly two more times, but and then we'll be done.
Okay.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank
you. All right, Todd. Okay, so I'm going to be presenting the first reading of the October 5-year forecast. The first slide we look at just kind of gives a nice, broad, high-level look at the entire financial picture of the district. You can see, looking at fiscal year 15, is the current year that we're in. We're forecasting years 16, 17, 18, and 19, so those are the five forecasted years of the forecast. The blue line there on top is revenue. The red line is expenditures. So you can see each year in the forecast, we have revenues exceeding expenditures. So that's a good thing. That means that our ending balance, that green line at the bottom, is continuing to go up. So that's a very good thing. Shows we're on firm financial footing throughout the forecast. I would point out there in the last fiscal year, 19, you can see the lines start to get pretty close together right there. That really is about $400,000, where we saw our revenue exceeding expenditures of about $400,000 in that last fiscal year of the forecast. And those prior 2 years, you're seeing about an $800,000 shift each year. So what that most likely means, you know, you're getting out in those way out years. There's a lot of assumptions in there that could really change. But assuming those things play out as forecasted, that $400,000 probably flips in the next fiscal year that's not on the forecast yet, so it's probably a deficit of $400,000 when it comes to comparing revenues and expenditures. But the good news is, in the meantime, we're building a strong ending balance, but that's really not a concern at that point. What that also means is we're meeting our cash balance policy. The graph there shows some of the indicators, I guess I'll say, up on the cash balance policy. The first is comparing 1 month of expenses to the ending cash balance. You can see in each year from 15 and beyond, the ending balance exceeds 1 month of cash balance, so that's good. The 7% of prior revenue, also we have the ending cash balance exceeds that as well. And obviously, one of the most important things, we don't have a negative ending balance throughout the forecast. And feel free to jump in if you have any questions. No problem, General. Looking at our general fund revenue sources, you can see on the graph there, state sources make up more than half of our general fund revenue. I think there's some good and some bad to that. Of the good, that means that the tax burden is a little less in our community with some of the state sources we're receiving. And also, you'll see later that our local tax revenue is relatively stagnant while we're actually projecting some increase in the state revenue. The bad side is, with having that much on the state side, is there's a lot of uncertainty. As we've seen in the past, state revenue can be cut. We've seen it with our tangible personal property. The state funding model is always open to change. So you can see the darker red bars there is the projected state revenue. You can see we're expecting growth there. But also, we point out that the fiscal year 14 and 15 is the biennial budget that we're currently in. So you can see in the forecast, that means we have two more biennial budgets. 16, 17, and 18, 19 will be two different biennial budgets, so that leaves a lot of room for uncertainty. We don't know how that will impact our state funding, and probably even more important, we don't know how that will impact our annual personal property reimbursement. Speaking of TPP, this graph shows the history of our tangible personal property taxes. At the height of that revenue source, we were receiving just over $9 million. That was taken away with House Bill 66. We were receiving over $6 million in reimbursements. Then the state cut that as well. So now we're at the level we're receiving about $5.6 million annually. That equates to about 10% of our general fund budget. So if something were to change there, that would obviously have a big impact on the district. Here shows some history on our values. Two most important things I would point out there are PUP values. That's there in the purple. You'll notice there we had a very large increase from 2012 to 13, about $21 million. That led to an increase looking at PUP revenue from 14 to 15. We were estimating $700,000 increase in revenue there. And one change I would note from the May forecast to this forecast is we've actually backed that revenue projection down about $150,000. Based on our first half revenue, it looks like most likely what's happened is one of these companies who's led to the large increase in valuations has possibly filed an appeal, which holds that revenue up until the appeal has been finalized. Also worth noting on there is our Class 2 total. That's our industrial commercial. We saw a decrease there from 12 to 13. Multiple levies that are rolled up to their max voted millage, and what that means is in a typical scenario where the effective millage is below the voted millage, if valuations go down, the millage will go up, so that we still receive the same revenue. Where that millage is already, the effective is at the voted rate, there's no room to roll up. So if that valuation were to continue to go down, then we would start losing revenue there. Some of the challenges to our operating revenue. We already talked about our tangible personal property and the risk there, and hopefully that, obviously have to lobby and hope that the state will maintain that revenue source in the upcoming biennial budget. The PUP values rose, so that's a positive to the district. in this forecast, we are projecting increases in state funding and our per pupil funding. The state economy has definitely made a strong turnaround, so we're using that as in our assumptions to assume that there's no reason they would be cutting our state per pupil funding. But obviously, we'll be keeping a close eye on that. Looking at that tangible personal property reimbursement that we receive, obviously we're not the only district getting that. The state spends about $480 million annually on that reimbursement to districts. If, for instance, they were to cut that or start to take money away, I think it's probably a safe assumption that they would probably take that money and put it into the general pot for state foundation funding. So I think at this point it's a safe assumption to assume our state foundation funding should at least grow at a small rate anyway. A couple things to point out in our revenue side, comparing this forecast to the May forecast, both on the positive side, we received an increase of $250,000 on our restricted state aid. That was due to catastrophic special ed reimbursement. That money is from special ed students in the district that their costs exceed a certain threshold. I believe it's around $27,000. So any costs that exceed that amount, we can ask the state to reimburse us for those. The reason for the large increase is that if those salaries are paid for out of the grant, you cannot get the reimbursement. So there was some shuffling there, having people paid out of different spots so that we were actually allowed to get access to get reimbursed for those salaries. So that was a very positive move, and we expect that revenue to continue throughout the forecast.
How much did it cost? Did we get full reimbursement for that? So for the reimbursement side, did we get as much as we spent?
Absolutely not. I think we put in, there's a lot of kids that we have a very high cost that doesn't exceed $27,000. So if they're at $25,000, you know, we're not getting any reimbursement for that. So I believe of the kids that were over the $27,000, we put in for about $1.5 million of expenses to get that $250,000 reimbursement. So that's a large cost for our budget. The other thing I wanted to point out is if you're really digging into the details, you'll probably notice a decrease in our state aid, which is line 1.035. That went down by $600,000, but that's not because we're receiving less funding. That's really just an accounting change. I noted last year, after the May forecast was completed, that they had increased what was known, kind of is indicated as preschool funding on our state foundation settlement report, but then at the same time they had increased the deduction. So really it was inflating our revenue while inflating our expenditures. So it changed how those are coded. So while we decreased the state foundation line, at the same time there's a purchase service expenditure line that decreased as well. So really just an accounting change so that things were coded properly. Turning to the expenditures, as with any school district, wages and benefits make up the majority of our expenditures. Still monitoring the Affordable Care Act. We've seen some increases due to that already. There's potential increases still looming. They're still constantly making changes. Definitely want to point out, some good news for the forecast. For 15, we had projected an 8% increase in insurance. The rate actually has come in at 3.4% effective January 1st, so that was a nice savings to the district. Since the renewal happens on January, that savings will be split over two fiscal years. So in fiscal 15, we'll have a savings of about $90,000, and in fiscal 16, another savings of about $90,000. Also in fiscal year 15, the BWC, Bureau of Workers' Comp, just announced that they'll be giving a refund of premiums, so there's another approximately $100,000 that we'll be receiving back in fiscal year 15 as a refund. You can tell from the graph, obviously, just with inflation factors, the expenditures do continue to rise. We had the issues there in starting in 12 and 13 where the state money, the TPP money was cut, so there were multiple expenditure reductions there. I would point out, you can, from a percentage factor, the blue line there, the benefits, is the expenditure line that is growing the fastest from a percentage standpoint. Looking at our levy history, I think it really shows that we've been very fiscally sound and efficient with our tax dollars. There's only been one new money issue passed since 1998. I guess the scary thing is that 1998 was 16 years ago. That's hard to believe. So one new money issue in the past 16 years. That was in 2008. We passed a 5 mil replacement and a 4 mil new millage levy. And then again in 13, those levies were renewed into a single 9 mil levy. Prior to that levy, the last new money issue was passed in 1998. That was an 8.9 mil continuing levy. And the November 13 levy that was passed was a renewal of our 5-year 6.56 mil levy. And that's going to expire in December 31st, 2019, which is actually outside of our current forecast. I do want to point out that levy renewals don't actually provide additional revenue to the district. And as I noted, you see our general real estate tax revenue is not really showing a large increase. The only increase we're really getting there is going to be from new construction, as well as we have 4.7 mils that they call our inside mils, and that small percentage actually does grow with inflation and new construction. Some of the risk factors in the forecast, you know, what could go wrong with our assumptions? Obviously, as I mentioned, the tangible personal property fixed rate reimbursements, 10% of our budget, we've got to keep a close eye on that. Having the two new biennial budgets, keeping an eye on our state funding and our per pupil funding, where does that go? I already talked about our Class 2 effective rates and on the industrial commercial properties. And we have to continue to monitor expenses. You know, we do show a healthy ending balance now, but you can also see that the expenditures start to catch up with the revenues toward the end.
So how does the, you've mentioned this several times, the TPP reimbursements are really critical. Mm-hmm. Is there any sense of, you know, the legislature, that is a real risk? Well, where does that stand in terms of?
I think it's certainly a risk just because we've heard multiple people with the state say that they're not a fan of reimbursements. So you can see there, you know, what they've done in the past to that already, and now they've already made some changes in fiscal 13 where they decreased that reimbursement again in the statement that they're not a fan of the reimbursements. And then I think you could also take that statement as it applies to the homestead and rollback reimbursements that districts receive, just with this latest House Bill 59, I believe, which now states that any new levies, the House Bill, the homestead and rollback reimbursement does not apply to those. So it's certainly a real risk.
The people who make statements like that, do they also indicate this idea that you mentioned that that money might just go into the foundation?
No.
One of the other things that's a part of this is that as the TPP has been cut, it's become a smaller and smaller part of many school districts' budgets. We're an exception to that in that it's still a sizable amount. So you have fewer districts that are going to be significantly adversely affected, and you have therefore fewer school districts that are raising this issue. So when you are looking at making laws and so forth, the voice keeps getting smaller and smaller. So.
Yeah,
and make sure our voice is louder and louder.
We are a part of a consortium of the existing districts that lobby and hire a lobbyist to lobby on our behalf as well. So we're active with them. We've also had conversations with Senator Burke. This was large on his agenda, I guess, when it first came around. So we'll continue to ask and probe, because the governor has come out more than once and said he is not a fan of guarantees, and this would be one example of that. So,
that's all I have. Any other questions? Okay, so another thing we talked about with the October forecast was the potential implementation of all-day everyday kindergarten and what that would look like. So, Diane talked about that.
We spent a little bit of time in a work session. Well, the Finance Committee reviewed this October forecast, too, and I just encourage board members, if you have any questions on the assumptions, contact Todd.
About 8 years ago, we switched, so this year, seventh graders were the first ones to come to all day, every day, as a tuition-based program. We've served about 590 students under that umbrella of the all day, every day tuition basis. What I'm going to show you is a collection of data points for kids who have been enrolled in all day, every day, compared to red-blue students. Understand that, remember, this year's seventh graders were first to go through, so I use their sixth grade data, and then this year's fourth graders, I use their third grade data. So we'll kind of talk through that as we move through that. So the data I'm going to show you doesn't represent 590 kids, because we have kindergarten 1, 2 in that as well. I thought I'd give you an idea of how many students of our current enrollment. So this year we have 95 all day, every day. In first grade, there were 70 kids in first grade that went to our all day, every day. I keep saying every other day. Keep correcting me if I mess that up. Okay, so let's look at reading first. So remember, again, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade tests. The dark red on the third each column represents the red proficient. So if they're proficient, advanced, or accelerated, we grouped them together for purposes of this presentation. If they were basic or limited, it's the lighter shade of kind of pinky red there. The darker blue represents the performance of all day, everyday students, proficient, advanced, or accelerated. And the lighter blue shows those students in all day, every day, that scored basic or limited. So you can see in third grade, certainly all day, every day, kids seem to outperform, if you want to put it in those terms, red and blue. Fourth grade the same. The more impressive thing is look how that fourth grade all day, every day below started to trend up as well. And then if you go to sixth grade, there were no students that fell in that basic and below category. So it's kind of a snapshot of reading. Math data points, same graph here, same color designation. I tried to make that a little better than the state's graph. And you kind of see the same trend and effect as well. So as you look, how the impact, that fifth grade is interesting, even as you look over time, there's a state interest in the fifth grade dip, but that's probably a different conversation as well. So the other thing that you saw in our report card is really talking about subgroups. And you hear me talk a lot about, no, these are F's on the report card. And I'd like to show you a little bit. We talked about two specific areas of concern, our students with disabilities. So out of the students enrolled, out of that cohort of kids that I gave you the test group on, so the third grade scores to sixth grade scores, 17% of those students ended up at some point qualifying for special education. And red-blue, over that same chunk of time, third grade to sixth grade, or this year's fourth graders to seventh grade, however you want to think about that, 23.3% of those students qualified for special ed. Not significant, probably. If you looked at the end of third grade, and that disability, the scores on the third grade test were 18% passage. But again, I use the same, or we use the same proficient accelerated advance for that category. You didn't break it out. But then you start to see some difference, certainly in sixth grade as well. Math. All day, every day, 25% scoring proficient or above, 19% in the red blue, and then as you look in the sixth grade, 22 and 14. So still some difference there in performance. This one kind of resonated a little more with me as we talked about socioeconomically disadvantaged. So as you look at that group of kids, look at the all day, every day slide. So that group, that testing group I've given you all the data about, there's 213 kids in that group. Out of that 213, only 12 were socioeconomically disadvantaged. So only 5% are taking that all day, every day for tuition option. While the other graph shows the amount of students in red blue rotation, at 26%. So then as we start to look at indicators of success, again, reading, we changed this one up a little bit, so it looks a little bit different. The blue graph is third grade, the kind of red is fourth grade, the gray is fifth grade, and the gold is sixth grade. So you can kind of start to look at the number proficient accelerated advance compared to not proficient on those tests. So as you look at not proficient, there aren't any disadvantaged students who were enrolled in all day, every day in fifth and sixth grade that were not proficient. Boy, there were a lot of double, triple, quadruple negatives in that statement. It seems that in fifth and sixth grade, we did not have a proficient, non-proficient category. Again, when you look at the red-blue side, same color indicators, and you can see the difference as well. As you look at math, looks pretty similar to the last one you just saw, same color designations on this graph, as well comparing your proficient to non-proficient, again, in that disadvantaged subgroup area specifically. So, first of all, are there any questions? I know I kind of hit you with a lot. Now, I can make the argument equally as enough that that's looking at 213 kids compared to 500. But I do think, especially when you look at those subgroup data pieces and think about the performance difference, that's significant in correlation to what I just showed you with our district data. And when you give that consideration and look at those two pieces. So certainly a lot to think about. As we move forward, about getting the right kids' exposure to all-day, everyday kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. This is one question, but the tuition-based, is that the same for the disadvantaged kids, or did they give?
There's a sliding scale. It's a 2,500, 24, and 2,300. 24 is for reduced lunch kids. 2,300 is for free lunch students.
For the full year.
For the full year of tuition. Yes. So what I would ask you to do is consider that K-3 literacy information I gave you to start with, the difference from our kids who are on track and on REM plans and how they're progressing, that AMO subgroup data that we just looked at, and the data I just gave you with all day versus every day. I think there's a copy of this information in board docs for you as well. Also, I want to give you a reminder on a couple things. We're moving to a new generation of assessments. As exciting as that sounds like a Star Trek voyage, I know, but it certainly does. I know that JT did a little article with all of the superintendents and with the new online testing, certainly there's a lot of unknowns for us on what that's going to look like. We know that our standards are more rigorous than ever, so the expectations for kids are higher than ever and continue to increase as we saw in the data report. We also have the third grade reading guarantee. Certainly you've heard a lot of great success stories from Raymond, but that bar is going to continue to increase. And not all of our students met the 400 benchmark. So, you know, we're still struggling in that area. And the K-1-2 impact on that is significant. You can't expect the third grade teachers to be solely responsible for that indicator. It's not realistic. And the last piece that I ask you to consider is the financial implication of the all-day, every-day. I think Todd's going to review that with you. Next month, I would imagine we'll have some kind of resolution or recommendation for all day, every day. So if there are questions this evening or between now and then, don't hesitate to ask.
I know in a lot of our building visits, I've heard it from several board members that we have heard from our elementary principals that they are very much in favor of all day, every day kindergarten. And I think you look at the data and the numbers. It clearly makes sense, you know, but there are some questions, and we have to make sure that we're doing the best with our finances and preparing all of our students. So.
Yeah, now, if we were to do something like this, in terms of if we have kindergarten, so if kindergarten for every child, all day, every day, what are the implications for intervention for our district?
Well, in looking at that data, again, my argument would be that we believe, I can't tell you absolutely, but we believe our intervention would dwindle over time at the upper grades. There'll still be a need for intervention that's mm-hmm. never going to go away with some of the needs of our students, but some of the other interventions and, you know, doing kind of tier two, tier three with other students, my belief would dwindle over time. So I think we'll see a staff savings, but that's based on that subgroup of data that I gave.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so looking at the financial picture. Really what I did was take the forecast that I just presented and added the expenditures in and made the changes based on our assumptions of what would happen with all the everyday kindergarten implementing those changes in fiscal year 16. This kind of gives you just a broad summary of the forecast. It takes out some of the details and just gives you the total revenue, total expenditures. So the first thing to mention with all the everyday kindergarten currently, that's a tuition program. So currently we have tuition revenue for that program. Equates to about $200,000. If we were to implement that district-wide, that $200,000, that tuition piece would go away. So there's a $200,000 decrease in revenue from 16 through 19. On the expenditure side, we anticipate there would be obviously an increased number of teachers. There would be some increase in some staffing with some like aides. And then there would also be some increases in transportation costs. We anticipate an increase in expenditures of $700,000 based on those expenses, again, starting fiscal year 16. So really, high level, we're talking $700,000 expenditures minus $200,000 revenue. It's about $900,000 swing. What that does to the big picture, if you remember from the original forecast, we showed fiscal year 19, that line 6.01, that compares revenues versus expenditures. That number was a positive, right around $400,000. So that $900,000 swing took that to a negative $523,000. As I mentioned earlier, we've got a strong unreserved fund balance, line 15.01. So that number had been growing, but obviously when expenditures exceed revenue, you're starting to eat into the ending balance. So the fiscal year 19 ending balance does start to go down slightly. $900,000 just in millage terms, that equates to about 1.3 mils. So that's kind of a high level impact. If there's any good questions on that.
Your point, Dick, was there might be some reductions of expenditures too down the road. I mean, that seems a little speculative, but you probably didn't try to take that into account either, right?
No, that would be very speculative, but it also, I don't know at what time we would expect those to start taking it. I mean, that would be a long-term savings as opposed to an immediate savings.
Yeah, I was thinking at least in part of the savings, but also in terms of just changing the nature of some of the instructional activities that we might be engaged in. So,
I don't know if anybody, Diane sent a really good article from Education Week that was talking about the benefits of all-day, everyday kindergarten. And so I would encourage everybody to read that. I don't know if you want to, if there's anything that pops. I mean, you covered some of the data up there, but
I think the article supported some of the same data points that we're seeing with school districts who have implemented full or partial implementation. And it's nothing disparate of
right. And one issue that we have is the fact that the state, that we're not getting funding for all-day, everyday kindergarten. And Dick and I attended a legislative breakfast, and Dick brought that point up to the person, and they listened but didn't really comment afterwards. And the fact that we're on the cap kind of means that even if they did fund it, we wouldn't get any additional money. But I think with the third-grade reading guarantee that some of those legislators did understand that with that third-grade reading guarantee, that's really an unfunded mandate, that it's tough to get the kids to that level when they're not funding all-day, everyday kindergarten. You know, and my kids went half-day every day, and I didn't even know when they changed it to all-day every other day, and I thought, I can't even imagine if there's a fog delay or, you know, last year with the snow days, I mean, there were some kids that didn't show up, maybe three or four times for the whole month in February. And you just lose so much. You know, it's hard to gain that back and get them to pass tests and that kind of stuff. So
I was at Navin for my building visit last year after we had a little run of missed days. Mm-hmm. And a kindergarten teacher nearly in tears said, mm-hmm. it's been 8 days since mm-hmm. I've seen my, I don't know, red kids. And right. they don't remember how to do school. You know,
right.
the big thing is things like where your boots go, where your coat goes, where you hang your book bag and how we get started for the day. You're reteaching all of those
right.
pieces. And certainly I think you probably remember that conversation as well. Was certainly moved by, you know, I spent my life in high school and that was something that I hadn't even really thought all the way through in my mind.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the data, and you mentioned the principals seem to support.
Mm-hmm.
What about the families? Do you have a sense of the families in the district?
Sure. Families are interested. Last year we did. There are families that go currently to other choices that are all day, every day as well. Trinity, so if they can't get into their home school, for example, some buildings can't offer an all day, every day. Like Raymond doesn't have the enrollment, so we ship those kids in. Sometimes at that point, then they choose that option and come back to us in first grade. So we've been trying to kind of accumulate that data as well. But there definitely is an interest and sense. A lot of people say that they can't afford it, that they don't work, and it's the better option to keep them at home and send them one day, you know, the every other day structure.
And I think also expectations for kindergartners
The article speaks to kindergarten is really the new first grade. I mean,
right.
I think you talk to any teacher in the district, what was taught in fifth grade formally, you can find parts of it in third grade. Seventh grade science, you can find parts of that in fifth grade science. So everything has shifted around and within. But really, kindergarten is the new first grade. What you're expected to know and be able to do when you leave first grade is significantly different than when I was in kindergarten, it was alphabet. And,
right.
and now you're in kindergarten and you're reading. So it's a significant shift. Mm-hmm. I can send you the link to ODE as well so you can mm-hmm. see some of those outcomes if you like.
And the other thing that was interesting I just thought about was the article was saying how the big push has been to fund preschool.
Right.
You know, so they're funding preschool, but they're not funding kindergarten, you know, and so there's kind of this big gap there. So hopefully they'll recognize that. You know, that would be my
goal. We had a parent, it just struck me a couple mm-hmm. years ago. She came in and she was getting some funding to return to school to better herself, and she was getting her bachelor's degree and was a single mm-hmm. mom, and she wanted to use money they provided for daycare for all day, every day kindergarten, and she was refused. And it was just, she was so frustrated, and I felt so sorry for her. She goes, I would rather they were in school with
right.
professionals learning on the state's dollar while I get better myself than I put them in some daycare. But that's what they funded, so. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for putting all that information together.
Thank you.
Okay, board president's report. I'll try and make this brief. I attended the chamber meeting this morning and just wanted to remind everybody that there is a covered bridge festival this weekend at the Pottersburg Bridge. It's a great way to support our county and go see some of the covered bridges. October 9th, there's going to be a Biz Fest downtown in front of the MEC, which is the Marysville Entrepreneurial Center, which is right across from the Union County Foundation, where I work. And they're going to have our Fab Lab there. The event goes from 2 to 7. Let's see. We've been continuing to work on our goals and objectives for the board, and I think that probably by next month we'll have something finalized and try and get that up on the website. And we are aligning ourselves to the district. I'm also really happy to say that we nominated Bruce Daniels for the Friend of Public Education and Joanne Morbitzer for the Exemplary School Employee, and they will both be receiving that award next week on September 24th at the Central Region Conference of Ohio School Boards Association, and then we will formally recognize them at our board meeting in October. But we're proud of them and happy that they'll be recognized. Another quick thing, Diane and Todd and Dick and I attended a really interesting OSBA conference about OTES and performance pay and heard some good studies, got some good examples and some ideas to start sharing throughout the district and just starting some conversations. Let's see, and also went to the legislative breakfast, and the legislators there were really interested in knowing what kinds of regulations are impeding our ability to educate our students. So, you know, kind of talked about OTES, how some of the complaints that came about from the burden to principals did result in some revisions to that law. So they do want to listen to us. We just have to make sure that we are talking to them. And the third grade reading guarantee was another thing that they brought up. So that's all I have. And now we have the Ohio High Point report, finally. Kevin?
Good evening.
Good evening.
How's everybody going? I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, so I guess I didn't put it up. So last month we held a meeting on the 27th, and Dr. Price talked about a number of things. He talked a little bit about the supply chain management program we'll be here at Marysville, recommended approval on the updated agreement. Mentioned that Jeremiah Martin was approved as the instructor. FFA convention, that location has been moved back to Kansas City, so I think it was at a different city for a few years. They moved it back, so I really don't know why. I talked a little bit in past meetings that there's a facility study that's underway, and so some of the administrators met with Freitag Associates. That's the group that's doing the study, and so they'll be facilitating the actual study, and then there'll be a larger committee formed kind of digest that information and develop a plan to move forward for the facility there. Dr. Price, I think I mentioned it at my last meeting notes, but he has indicated that he will resign, or not resign, but retire, I should say, and I think that will be July something of next year. So that was part of the meeting discussion was to form a committee for the research and so forth. So that will be really... a lion's share of that activity will occur in October. They're doing some of that background work right now, getting prepared for that. Treasurer's report, nothing unusual. Your basic blocking and tackling was reported by the treasurer. We did go into executive session. Probably the big piece there was really talking about some of the compensation and employment issues. And then the treasurer's evaluation was also discussed. And not going into any great detail, but really was a strong evaluation from all the board members. So good job by the current treasurer. Warren Stevens, he's the legislative rep. He serves on that committee. He talked about a number of key legislative pieces, and one of them was the Common Core and that effort to repeal. So that got a lot of traction in the meeting. Shelley Sweeney talked about kind of the update. There are a number of new staff members for the North Fountain campus. There were eight. So it's kind of a large group of new folks. They had an open house or orientation for the new students, about 450 folks or students attended that. Their first day of class for level one students was August 19th, and the following day was the 20th, and that was for level two students. So Deb Wortman gave some updates as well, written updates. I had mentioned they have a lot of new staff, and so she conducted a what's called Surviving Satellites 101. So it's like an onboarding informational session for the staff. It was well received. And she did indicate she's working closely with this district on the STEM items and the supply chain and some of the future expansion. In terms of Marysville School teacher update, Sally Andrews reported out to the students had a great time. Some of the nursing or health technology students went to Disney World for a competition. They did not place in the top 10, but they had a great time, a good learning experience, and met a lot of students across the country. It looks like she did indicate that the pharmacy tech program is being added this year, and there's eight students that have been enrolled in that program. There's just some other miscellaneous things. It's in the report, but in terms of data, to get a sense of enrollment, this school year is 557. That's up approximately 40 students from last year. And in 2012 here, it was 567, so we're close to that. I looked at some of the data, and that was interesting. Look at some of the IEP data. The top three schools in terms of highest IEP percentage, Marysville was about 38%, Upper Scioto and Graham were 33% respectively. The average was a little shy of 26%. As you recall, they're starting the school day 15 minutes early. There's been very little transportation issues. One school's struggling a little bit. That's Waynesfield Goshen, I guess, on some of the logistical problems. It has to do with the bus, but I think they've gotten that worked out, sounds like. I talked a little bit about the superintendent search. He did announce that his retirement will be effective July 31st, 2015. And then in the notes, I provided what the remainder of the meeting dates will be for this year. If you're interested. I assume he's asking for that, so you're fine with this in the notes. I apologize for my voice. I've been in meetings all day. I've conducted most of that. It's about shop. So that's the conclusion of my report, unless you have questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you like to share anything about your tour through the Fab Lab?
It was fabulous. Yeah. It was, I'm trying to think, it was last Friday. The Fab Lab came out to Honda, and I was really blown away by some of the technology inside the lab, and I think it's a wonderful way of getting kids excited about manufacturing and the prospect of working with all those. I call them gizmos, right? There's words for them, but all that high-tech gizmo. I think it would be a great thing to get kids excited and exposed to some of that technology. Like I tell folks, it's manufacturing is not like your daddy's in the factory. It's so different with the advent of technology and the computers and so forth. So that's the challenge, is to get kids engaged in manufacturing. And I think inform them that it's a very meaningful career. And we like to say there's a lot of upper mobility in manufacturing. So it's a good activity. Glad to see it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Finance Committee report, basically kind of covered that. I mean, we basically just talked about the five-year forecast and had some discussion about all-day, every-day kindergarten. The next meeting, we'll be covering the PI forecast. And, oh, did I did. I just passed over you, Dick. Sorry.
Good. As has been mentioned, you and I attended the legislative breakfast at OSBA, and there had invited a number of legislators, current legislators that are up for re-election, and also some challengers and other candidates that were running for office. And it was interesting just listening to their different perspectives. The fact that they were all before the School Board Association, they all had typically very positive things to say about education. Did hear from some of the incumbents some information that was interesting. There were two representatives, one Republican, one Democrat, that said that they felt like that the hearing on Common Core was not likely to really go beyond the committee, that there didn't seem to be a lot of support for that discussion, which from what I think we've talked about, I think is consistent with what we think. You know, give us some time to put these goals into place and see what these goals produce. And if something needs to be changed, then we can address that. Additionally, one of the people that was there is currently on the Ohio Constitutional Modernization Commission. Mm-hmm. And there was a recommendation on one of the committees to remove the words "thorough and efficient." We passed a resolution in opposition to that, and his comment was that it was unlikely that that was going to move forward, that thorough and efficient would stay part of the Ohio Constitution. So that was encouraging. As also mentioned, I had an opportunity to attend an event with Governor Kasich, and he made some comments there that kind of echoed where we were in terms of Common Core. put this, you know, into place, let it run its course, see what transpires. He was very strong in that school boards, school administrators are controlling instruction, controlling the curriculum. And I have to say, I heard a comment one time, or a comment, I can't remember where it was, but the person that was talking, may have been one of the meetings or the legislative breakfast, talked about students moving from one district to another and moving from one state to another, and how oftentimes when students come, they're not where they need to be, and you have to go back and try to, you know, move them forward so that they're with the remainder of the students. So it makes some sense that schools across a state and schools across state boundaries share at least some common vision of where the goals might be, even if instructional methods, the content of their instruction is a little bit different. If they come in and they're all on somewhat the same page, it may make things a little bit easier. But again, we're going to have to kind of see that. And in talking to people and sending out emails and so forth, they're thinking about the next biennium budget already, and so it's time to continue the discussions mm-hmm. about funding for our school district and where we are and what we need to try to hold on to, because you just subtract 10% off that budget and the forecasts begin to change rather dramatically pretty quickly. So, but working on that.
I know. You're doing a great job. Thank you. Okay. Mrs. Powers is not here, but I talked to her briefly, and she said the Safety and Drug Committee, they're just continuing with their start talking and working on scheduling those comments. And so that's all she had. Okay. Let's see. I think I'm in the right place here. I know. Well, public participation, right? No public participation. Then we need a motion to approve our minutes from both our, our August 21st meeting, and then we had, a special meeting on August 28th.
Second.
Mr. Pleasant? Second?
Second.
Mr. Smith. Roll call, please.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Treasurer CFO items. We need a motion to approve these items. I'll make that motion. Do you have a second? Mr. Pleasant, any discussion?
Yes. Sorry.
Go for it.
One thing I wanted to point out on the treasurer action items, we're approving the amounts and rates tonight, which is a document from the county auditor that shows the millage the district is collecting and the expected collection of that. One thing I wanted to point out is on that, the millage rate we're approving tonight on the amounts and rates for the bond for our bond fund is 6.7 mils. We've had the discussion in the past where that 6.7 mils is not enough to completely cover our debt service needs. In the past, we've allowed that to incrementally increase as to lessen the burden on our permanent improvement fund. And also, we'd had the question was asked, what would it take for the debt service fund to be self-sustaining? As of now, that number is right around 2.5 mils. It kind of varies from year to year based on what the principal and interest payments are going to be. But on average, it's about 2.5 mils is the number it would take to cover that. Annually, at least in most years, the PI fund is contributing about $1.7 to $1.8 million to the debt service fund to make up that gap. The 2.5 mils, what does that equate to? 1 mil equals about $30 on a $100,000 house. So if an average house was about $200,000, 2.5 mils would be about $150. I bring this up now because this discussion needs to be, if we do want to make a move, whether it be to move it up incrementally or to allow it to be self-sustaining, if that were to happen for the collection year 2015, we would have to make that decision at the October board meeting.
So you're looking at $11 a month on a escrow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If they had, if that
a
was
200, yeah, with a $200,000 house.
On a $200,000 house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so again, the 6.7 mils that's showing here, that is what we are collecting now.
Yes.
And the voted millage was.
Well, with the bond,
yeah,
with
okay.
the bond issue, there isn't a voted millage.
Okay.
When you see a
right.
ballot, you're not voting on a millage. You're actually voting on the amount of debt. And
okay.
the reason that is that amount is guaranteed. So no matter what happens to valuations, the county auditor can collect the amount needed to cover that debt.
Okay. That's right. Okay. Well, and I know you're going to be working on that, on the PI forecast too. So, yeah, if you have questions, let Todd know. You know, if we want to come in and meet with you to ask some more things, I mean, it's a lot of information to digest in 1 month and a lot of information to work on. But we have been having this conversation over the past couple years, actually, and have talked about slowly increasing that so that we aren't using those PI funds because we know we have buses that need replaced and roofs that need repair and blacktop, all that kind of stuff that we don't want to be putting off. So,
right, because we've got the report that we got,
you know,
said that we've got $3 to $4 million a year just in maintenance issues
right.
that we need to be preparing for. So,
okay, thank you. Thanks for that update. Let's see, is there anything else in there? I think just all the regular reports. Any other questions? Okay, then we have a roll call, please.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Right, motion carries. Okay, superintendent items. Need a motion to pass. Let's see, I think there's three in my. My internet went down, so I'm using the paper one, but I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Five different items under the superintendent items. You need a motion to pass those.
So moved. Second.
Okay. Mr. Smith's motion and second by Mr. Pleasant. Diane?
Certainly, well, I'd like to recognize retirement of Barb Herzog at Northwoods.
Yeah.
Long-time teacher in the district, and will be leaving us actually at the end of this school year, but went ahead
right.
and turned her letter in to us now. So
okay.
certainly wish her well in her
right.
retirement. Again, you have supplementals on this time. We also have nearly three pages of volunteers. So the impressive thing since I first stepped foot in this district is every month we have volunteers continuing to add to the list, so appreciate their commitment to our kids as well. There were a couple overnight trips. I wanted to make sure that you noticed the FFA convention that was mentioned earlier, high tech with the health program, and then extending that, I think, to Washington, D.C. as well. So they were going to... if I remember right, the state conference, right?
National conference. Right.
Yep.
And then the national, the FFA convention in Louisville.
Yep.
Okay. And the Columbus State Community College, I know that's an ongoing That's agreement with them.
That's the same agreement that we've had prior. So we'll look to making arrangements as soon as those are firmed up with this current contract.
Right. I know you have a note in there that it's a tremendous benefit to the community and surrounding areas, and I think that's so true. So that's really a nice partnership.
One of the other things is we've got several teachers that are young future teachers who are doing field experiences in our district, and I have had that opportunity, and I know it's a lot of fun to create some additional challenges for the supervising teacher, and extra work and extra responsibility and all those kinds of things. And so I think it's really nice that we have teachers in our district that are willing to take that on and serve as mentors and role models for some of the young aspiring educators.
Any other questions? Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. All right. Comments and questions from board members. Mr. Luke.
Thanks to our folks and all the presenters. I found all the presentations very useful, very helpful. I wanted to mention I've been invited to speak at the Union County Bar Association next month on behalf of the school board, and talk a little bit about the Common Core discussion and a little bit more about the early college high school to make sure they know how exciting that is.
Great.
I have brochures if you want to take some with you.
Okay.
Just let me know.
Mr. Pleasant.
I know we talked a little bit about liaisons, but I'll just make one comment. I did talk with Food Services, Joanne, enjoyed the conversation with Ron Transportation. But one of the things, and you probably already know, but I didn't know, is that we were serving breakfast. And I just wanted to make sure that we pushed that out because she wanted to emphasize that they're not taking advantage of it as they have that opportunity. And one of them is transportation. One of them is they come in later, but I at least wanted to mention that she would like to encourage that.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. Mr. Smith.
Again, thank you very much. I enjoyed my visit earlier this week, and it's great to come back this evening. Presentation was very nice. Thank you. And I've talked enough.
Okay. Mr. Johnson.
Same here.
Okay.
I'm sure I've talked.
Okay. I know. I've talked way too much, too. So thank you, Carol, very much. Thanks for all the goodies that you brought us and your wonderful hospitality, as always. So, and appreciated your report. Look forward to seeing great results, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Mr. Pleasant.
Second.
Mr. Smith. Roll call, please.
Mr. Pleasant?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Meeting is adjourned at 9:05. Thank you.
5.
Yeah. My clock's a little fast.
Oh, these chairs are not designed for adults.
Or big guys, right?
I left them because they're cushy. Otherwise, all I have are like folding chairs.
Yeah,
right.
This is, no.
Oh, no.
I appreciate the cushiness.
I didn't catch, I was typing when you were talking. What's
true.
Are you
breakfast. Our food service provides breakfast, and that Joanne feels like
and it's breakfast for all levels. It's a K-12.
Yeah.
I think Todd said that.
They will serve you. But they also can,
they can come and pay, too, free and reduced or to pay. Right. And she just felt like not as many people are taking advantage.
Yeah. Oh, they have milk. They do.
I bet Dick probably goes there for breakfast.
Do a good job.
Let's go there somewhere.
All right.
I know, that's what puts you over the edge.
We don't rate it by your
I give kudos when the kudos are there.